Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.
Coming up on Weekend America.
Hey, why can't a candidate get some respect?
And a perfect example is when I'm handing out literature and talking to people, canvassing, and trying to promote Ron Paul. And they ask me, are you Ron Paul, and what are you running for?
Inside Ron Paul's presidential campaign. You know, Ron. Ron Paul. Well, stay tuned if you've never heard of him. I'm Desiree Cooper.
And I'm Bill Radke. If you've got an ear for music, I bet you've got an ear for golf.
I'm not interested in golf at all. In fact, I'm the world's most spastic person.
This hour, settle down your swing with science. And one woman recalls how she set off the soldiers during World War II.
I had pigtails, and I always wore dresses. And I would stand out there and try to sing loud enough to be heard by the boys in the plane overhead.
Singing soldiers into battle and home again. Coming up on Weekend America after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, welcome to The Weekend. I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Desiree Cooper in St. Paul, Minnesota. Now, for most of the country, winter isn't golf season, but this weekend, some of you may be headed to a golf dome to improve your skills before the weather breaks. So here's a tip. Instead of looking at your swing, why don't you listen to it? What are you doing this weekend?
This weekend, I'm working with my band to finish up a record.
I have drill this weekend. I'm in the reserves.
What I'm doing this weekend is going up to Highland Park on Saturday for a two-year-old's birthday party.
Oh, this weekend, I'm going to be driving my taxi cab around the city of Chicago.
And then after that, I'm going out to a nature area to birdwatch short-eared owls.
My plans for this weekend include riding my bike probably 6 to 8 hours, and then I'll probably paint my bedroom.
I've never seen a short-eared owl, but I'm hopefully going to see one on Sunday.
And we hope that for you as well.
Those voices came from Minneapolis, Chicago, and Lincoln, Nebraska.
This weekend, the presidential candidates are spread out wide in Michigan, South Carolina, Nevada, Florida, and California. Since Tuesday's vote in New Hampshire, the campaign has opened wider as well. Super Tuesday looks crucial. That's February 5th, when 24 states hold their votes. Our reporter John Moe has been profiling the also-rans of this campaign in a series called I'm Also Running for President. And John tells us that one of those Super Tuesday states just might go for Ron Paul.
Kalispell is in northern Montana, gateway to Glacier National Park. In a neighborhood of newer homes near a snowed-over golf course is David Hart's house. He's the state director for the Ron Paul campaign and Paul's only paid Montana staff member. David's overflowing desk is right next to his bed.
Well, I usually go to bed about 1 or 2 in the morning, and I roll out of bed around 7 or so don't have to walk too far to get to work. So pretty much everything in between here and there is working hours.
David looks exhausted. His voice is shot. Those 18-hour days are spent on the phone and on email trying to win the upcoming GOP caucuses. And it might work. According to new rules in Montana, only about 2,800 people can participate. But going to a caucus in winter in Montana can mean a lot of driving through snow and ice, and the positions aren't paid. So while many of the 2,800 slots are filled with party regulars, David sees opportunity in those still up for grabs.
Out of about 1,700, 1,800 voting positions of precinct captains, 1,100 of those positions were vacant. You know, that was the obvious thing we needed to do is to get Ron Paul the nomination is we needed to begin filling those precinct spots with Ron Paul supporters. In Flathead County, where I live, 100% of the spots that were filled since August have been with Ron Paul supporters.
David's been a Paul fan for two decades. Paul polls around 5% nationally, but his style of libertarian politics is a good fit for Montana, which still has a bit of a frontier feel.
Limited government, you know, lower spending, no nation building, no policing of the world. These are all things that the Republican Party used to stand for. But all the other candidates on the stage seem to have forgotten that. Ron Paul is the only voice of reason in trying to bring the party back to its foundational roots.
David's never donated money to a candidate before, much less gone to work for one. But he sees some deep-seated problems in the country, and he feels a sense of urgency.
And as I began researching things like the Federal Reserve System and some of the elite organizations that are kind of like the man behind the curtain of the Wizard of Oz type thing. You know, you've got organizations that have a lot of power in this nation and in the world that really do control a lot of the way things work. And when I started digging into that further, I realized that it wasn't just conspiracy theory. It was actually reality. And there's a lot of truth to some of these, quote, conspiracy theories that are out there.
Like what?
Well, things like the Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, back in the 89 when I first learned about this organization, it was hard to get anybody in mainstream media to even acknowledge that it existed. Now it's talked about very freely and openly. But their agenda is not for the well-being of the American people or the sovereignty of this nation. They've got an agenda that erodes our sovereignty and leads us more towards a global government-type situation.
The Council on Foreign Relations did not return a phone call requesting comment for this story. As he tries to spread the word about Ron Paul and guide his man to victory in Montana, David Hart sees other organizations lined up against him. The idea is that the people would want Ron Paul, but the puppet masters would have a problem with it.
The majority of the mainstream media is owned by just a handful of corporations, and they've got their talking points. They've been given instructions on who to give coverage to and who not to, and Ron Paul threatens the establishment, threatens the status quo. A lot of money stands to be lost if the ideas of Ron Paul ever get implemented in this country.
We left David's house and went to Sykes Market in downtown Kalispell for lunch with other supporters from nearby towns like Whitefish, Woods Bay, and Big Fork. All ages, all political backgrounds, very little in common except fervent devotion to Ron Paul. Clarice Ryan is retired and has concerns about education.
The first step is getting rid of phonics, because with phonics, you can't read. And if you can't read, you can't learn. So it's all a plan. You said something about where did this all come from. It has been evolving. There's always been people in the world that are trying to take over the world from the Roman Empire days.
Josh Pipolo, a paramedic firefighter, supports Paul's stance against the war in Iraq.
Recruitment's at an all-time low, desertions at an all-time high, military suicides at an all-time high. The U.S. military cannot be sustained. Our economy can't sustain it. And we can't even put the troops in it.
Blake Johnson is a more traditional conservative Republican, but doesn't mind that Ron Paul isn't.
I completely disagree with him on capital punishment. I say if there's hard evidence and they've committed the crime, take them down.
That's not a deal-breaker issue for you.
Oh, they'll just be sitting around for about 4 to 8 years. You know, we can always fry them afterwards. That's my deal.
So it's this coalition that hopes to take the GOP primary in what is a very libertarian state. People here like to be left alone. They like their guns. They're not crazy about the government. But that libertarianism presents some political challenges. Judy Campbell recalls a conversation with a potential supporter who wasn't registered to vote.
So I gave him a voter registration card, and I said, you know, take care of that, and then I'll see you later. He said, no, I won't register to vote because I don't want the government knowing who I am and what my business is. You know, and so this is a problem with Montanans. I mean, I respect that, but it's time that we have to overcome that.
Besides libertarianism itself, Paul's supporters must also overcome their man's anonymity. Josh Pipolo gets frustrated at how little name recognition Paul has, even after beating Rudy Giuliani in Iowa.
Perfect example is when I'm handing out literature and talking to people, canvassing and trying to promote Ron Paul, and they ask me, are you Ron Paul and what are you running for?
Ron Paul's supporters are canvassing all over Montana this weekend. Even if they win, it remains unlikely their man will get the nomination. But even then, most of the people I met said they'll simply write his name in next November anyway.
R-O-N-P-A-U-L. You should be able to write it in if it comes to that.
In Kalispell, I'm John Moe for Weekend America.
That's part of John Moe's series called I'm Also Running for President, about some of the lesser-known candidates. And in case we excited your interest there, you can watch Ron Paul on The Tonight Show. We've got Ron Paul, his channel on YouTube, Ron Paul supporters chasing Fox News' Sean Hannity, and much more where that came from. All at our website, that's weekendamerica.org.
Well, many political candidates live and die by the polls, but there's something about this year's presidential campaign that may render some polls useless. For the first time in history, an African-American, Barack Obama, is making a strong bid for the presidency. And in the past, polls have tended to overestimate the depth of support for African-American candidates. That's called the Bradley effect. Now, it may have been at play this week in New Hampshire, where Obama's comfortable lead just shrank to 2-point loss in the last hours of the election. Michael Fontroy teaches public policy at George Mason University. This week he blogged about the unreliable polls and Obama's campaign. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Michael, what exactly is the Bradley effect?
Well, the Bradley effect is a phenomenon that dates back to the early 1980s and got its name from Tom Bradley based on the 1982 California gubernatorial race, in which white voters tell pollsters one thing and vote a different way once they actually get in the ballot box. And some of it is about voters not wanting to be sort of overt in their racial concerns about a particular candidate. And in the case of Tom Bradley, he had a tremendous lead going into the weekend before his campaign, before the election, rather, and seemed to have a very comfortable lead, but yet lost. And so, you know, there is this notion that voters aren't always honest with pollsters. Now, that has declined somewhat over the years, but it is still a factor.
And it repeated after Bradley.
It repeated a number of times. During the 1980s, you began to see a number of African-Americans seeking elective office in places in which there had never been African-Americans running. You had Harold Washington, who ran for mayor of Chicago in a very closely contested race. Another very notable example is Doug Wilder's 1989 Virginia gubernatorial race, in which he had a double-digit lead in the weekend before the balloting and actually only won by less than one percentage point.
Is the Bradley effect, do you think, is it still at play? And if it is, how is it at play?
Our polling is much better now than it was in 1982. And I think pollsters are on the lookout for things that may tip off the Bradley effect. It's been 26 years nearly. As you fast forward the clock, I think there's less likely to occur now as in 1982, but I do still think it can be seen. The question for me is, you know, how many points does that account for in the race in New Hampshire?
Michael, how do you think we'll see the Bradley effect play out in the future in this election?
Pollsters are going to be more on the lookout for this. Voters and poll respondents are going to be on the lookout for this a bit more. Well, I think the extent to which, you know, we see the Bradley effect as we go forward through these primaries, it'll be very stark as, you know, more of the Democratic candidates fall by the wayside. Governor Richardson has announced that he's stepping out of the race. And so there are really only three major candidates. And once it appears clear that either John Edwards or Hillary Clinton falls by the wayside, you'll then have a circumstance in which voters are confronted with the absolute likelihood that an African-American could win the Democratic nomination and therefore could actually win the presidency. And so as we go forward and you see some of these other races, particularly races in sort of the Mid-South, I would say when you go from Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, Missouri, these are states in which that sort of thing could possibly show itself again.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you for joining us.
Very happy to help.
Michael Fontroy teaches public policy at George Mason University. You can find Michael's blog and check out upcoming primaries. Just go to our website at weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week.
You know how the Car Talk guys always want you to imitate your engine's noise? Well, there's something to that. The sound of science, next on Weekend America. Thank you.
We're glad to have you with us. This is Weekend America from American Public Media. I'm Desiree Cooper in St. Paul, Minnesota.
And I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles. The first PGA Open of 2008 is this weekend on Oahu. And there's a lot of buzz about one of the golfers. He's only 17 years old. He's the youngest PGA player in 50 years. Now, you might find this somewhat depressing, A, that it's January and somebody else is getting paid to play golf in Hawaii today, and B, that one of them was born in the 1990s. But Jonathan Berger is not concerned with any of that stuff. He's a composer and music professor at Stanford. He doesn't even play golf. But there is one aspect of the game that has fascinated him for years, and it's the same thing that fascinates him about cancer cells. Jonathan Berger is interested in what these things sound like. Weekend America's Chrissy Clark has the story.
This is a story about a musician who accidentally became a scientist. But before we get to either the musician or the science, consider, for a moment, the golf swing.
Oh, that was the wrong direction.
That wasn't where you were planning on it going.
No, over there, actually.
There are many approaches to mastering the golf swing.
I relax my grip just a little bit.
Keep your head down and keep your left arm straight.
Left arm behind the ball.
It's all in your hips.
It's all about timing.
As you start to flex your knees,
just swing and hope you hit the ball.
And they all sound like complete nonsense at first. It's that elusive je ne sais quoi.
The je ne sais quoi of the golf swing.
That's Amy Ladd. She's an orthopedic surgeon at Stanford University and sometimes golfer. And she's made it her mission to understand the science of the golf swing, from the twist of the wrist to the tilt of the anterior superior iliac spine. So she brought professional golfers to her motion laboratory and attached to their bodies and golf clubs dozens of small white markers.
They're about the size of, say, larger than a pea. Yeah, a blueberry. That's perfect size of a blueberry.
As the golfer swings, a computer calculates how the markers move through space. From that, Ladd figures out how the golfer's bodies move, too. But understanding the movement is the easy part.
You know, they call it in golf the sweet spot.
Teaching someone to find it, well, that's plagued golfers for almost 1,000 years. And that's where Jonathan Berger, the musician from Stanford, comes in. He's a friend of Amy Ladd's.
I'm not interested in golf at all. In fact, I'm the world's most spastic person.
But when he heard Ladd talk about the agony of watching someone try to learn a golf swing, it gave him an odd sense of deja vu.
I watched my daughters learn to play cello. And for any parent who's suffered that, it's agonizing. You know, it's total agony.
No.
Oh, bend your fingers.
And then one day it clicks. One day they get it, right? You see this moment when a kid gets how to bow, and you realize that there's this incredible complexity in the wrist, in the muscles, in the forearm. Everything is complex, and it's all integrating in a certain way. And it only works because of auditory feedback. And so,
Berger, the musician, and Ladd, the golfing doctor, had a bizarre collective hallucination. What if he composed auditory feedback for the golf swing? So when you swung a golf club wrong, you made the same sort of horrible, horrible noises as a beginning cello player. Something like...
Hello.
And what if when all your muscles and joints did everything right, you made a pure sound?
Hello.
Distort the movements of the golf swing, the sound gets distorted too.
Hello.
And the degree of the distortion is the degree of divergence from the sweet spot.
Berger calls this technique sonification. By sonifying the golfer's body, by putting it to music, he can reveal new information, new patterns.
So what I'm after is representing complex dynamic systems in sound.
This is not a new idea, Berger says. Sounds have always told us a lot.
The lawyer on Car Talk.
I've got a 93 Volkswagen Eurovan.
The click and clack, the Tappet Brothers. I mean, the first thing they always do is ask people to imitate the sound of what's wrong in their car, right?
And it goes like...
They actually have this language.
Does it make this noise when your foot is on the clutch?
You can take these musical terms and diagnose what's happening without opening the hood. we know that we have this intuitive, ingrained use of auditory cues. So that's a musical language.
A car has its own musical language. So do the cells in our body. This sound you're hearing now is the sonification of a benign colon cell. And this is the sound of cancer. Berger has been working with cancer researchers and mathematicians on non-invasive ways to detect cancer. Instead of doing a biopsy, you can do things like magnetic resonance imaging, MRIs. But the problem is, you get so much information that in a visual form, it's extremely difficult to separate the important data from the meaningless stuff. So Berger has assigned different sounds to different data points.
Imagine there's an orchestra of 100 players, right? And each of those points is mapped to one of those orchestra players.
Essentially, he's creating a symphony based on the information contained in the cells. And our ears can tell the difference between a benign symphony and a malignant one. But Berger is ultimately not a scientist. And so even the sounds of cancerous cells are beautiful to him. This is the music he made from them.
I don't think I would ever write in program notes that the sounds they're hearing are the sounds of malignant colon cells. But I was very much taken by sort of the... I thought they were very beautiful sounds. And I just made an orchestra out of different levels of healthiness of cells.
Maybe this weekend, you'll be listening to the hushed applause on the golf course at the Sony Open. Maybe you'll be listening to the churn of a washing machine or the clatter of plates at a diner. Whatever you're doing, Jonathan Berger reminds you to listen. What might those sounds be telling you? In Palo Alto, California, I'm Chrissy Clark for Weekend America.
You know, Bill, this reminds me of the idea of biofeedback, you know, where if you measure your heart rate, for example, you can consciously control it. But here, instead of seeing the information, you're hearing it.
That's right. And there's more, too. Berger has sonified Tai Chi movements and earthquake data. He's using sound to help patients regulate breathing during CAT scans. We've got more about his work at weekendamerica.org. This weekend, Berger is rehearsing this violin concerto based on the contours of an oil spill in the Mediterranean a couple of years ago. The piece is called Gia, and it'll be performed next month at the Banff Center for the Arts.
Weekend America is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, KPCC Los Angeles, and KUOW Seattle, and is made possible in part by the University of Washington Executive MPA Program.
Coming up, we bring you snow as it blankets us in poetry, music, and memory. Stay tuned to Weekend America. Thank you.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke with Desiree Cooper. For a lot of us, the soundtrack to our work week is clacking keyboards and HVAC hum. But when your weekend comes, you get to choose the music. And that's what this segment is about. We ask you to share your weekend soundtrack with us and tell the story behind it. A listener named Tamara Neff hears us in Baltimore on WYPR. She told us the soundtrack to her weekend is by the former lead singer of Concrete Blonde, Johnette Napolitano. The song is called Everything for Everyone.
Now don't you look at me with jaded eyes, and don't you accuse me of compromise, because this is the first day of the rest of my life. Today I married myself and I became my own wife.
I became my own wife. Tamara, why is this your weekend soundtrack?
That was actually the line that stopped me in my tracks when I first heard the album and heard that line and stared right at the radio and couldn't believe that she had just said what was exactly going on in my mind at the time.
Why was that in your mind?
I was in a job that was basically making me crazy, and when that was coming to a head after 2 years, my brother decided to join the Army, which started to make me a little bit more crazy.
I used to care, I used to cry, I used to obsess about it. I used to think it was my destiny to suffer inside.
What was that like for you when your brother joined?
You know, I was proud of him, and I wanted him to do what he wanted, and it was also difficult, as, you know, when someone you love is making choices that could have huge ramifications on themselves and the other people you love.
So how did this song connect with those frustrations?
I think it was just, you know, you realize that you want to keep everybody happy, you want to make everyone around you happy, and you just can't do it. At some point, it has to be about what you need.
I was the one who wanted everything for everyone. I was the one who wanted everything for everyone.
I quit that job, and, you know, my brother's doing great in the service, and everything is sort of worked out for the best, but I think you have to remind yourself that you made that choice. I'm taking care of me a little bit more than I'm worrying about other people these days.
But not anymore. No, 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 not anymore.
She doesn't want to be in pain. She's not the keeper of the flame.
Everything that she says is just seems so right on, and you know, that she would rather be crazy for real than to let other people make her crazy.
You son of a son, you daughter of none. No, no, don't you tell me who and how I need to be.
How does this song drive your weekend?
Part of the decision to take care of myself a little bit more has been to give myself time to do the things that I enjoy doing. And, you know, I'm a crafter. I do a lot of sewing and a lot of crochet, and that's what my weekends are to me now. And I listen to the music and I do my creative things, and I don't hold myself to any other obligations, really. My weekends are for me.
Yeah, that's what this song is. It's a crocheting song. Just listen to it.
Well, the punk rock crochet, let's say.
Tamara, thanks for introducing us to this song and for sharing your weekend soundtrack.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Tamara Neff might be crocheting right now in Baltimore, where she hears us on WYPR. That soundtrack to her weekend is Everything for Everyone by Johnette Napolitano.
Go listen to our whole collection of weekend soundtracks. And while you're doing that, share your own and tell us your story behind it. Hang out in our listening room. Go to weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And in St. Paul, Minnesota, I'm Desiree Cooper. This is the show about the American weekend. With the announcement of the Golden Globe Sunday, you might be catching a movie. One popular film this season has been Will Smith's I Am Legend. That's where he thinks he's the last person on Earth. The movie gives us a good idea about how bad that would be. Well, we've been asking you how you've been spending your winter weekends. And we heard back from Eva Powell, who listens to us from Lincolnton, North Carolina, WFAE. And she says that for her family, a few winter hours of desolation and loneliness is a beautiful thing.
My name is Eva Powell, and I live in Lincolnton, North Carolina, very close to the mountains. And my favorite way to spend a winter weekend with my family is to drive up to the parkway, which is often closed in some parts, and hike on the highway when there's no cars. A lot of times there's no people, and we'll enjoy ourselves on the freeway. It's sort of strange, but when I'm there, I take these amazingly deep breaths. I just feel like breathing because everything feels so calm. There really is hardly anybody there. Once in a while, there would be a bicycler that will pass you by or a runner, but definitely not too many families with kids. We'll be on this road for an hour and not see anybody at all, and you just get this weird feeling like you're in some kind of a science fiction movie and you're the last person in the world, and you feel like, well, what if we get home and everybody's disappeared and we're the only ones left, but yet we're so lucky because we're left all alone in this beautiful place and there's no cars, so it's really idealistic idea of being left alone in the world. But of course, our favorite thing to do is to scare each other and say, car's coming! And of course, it gets you every time because you're walking in the middle of the highway and the other one always gets freaked out. It works every time. And then on extra warm days, we'll take our blanket and our picnic and we'll just set it out in the middle of the highway just because we can and start eating our lunch. And, the babies will run around and we don't have to worry about them because there really is no place for them to get lost or get hurt. And we'll just sit there and usually bring a bottle of wine and enjoy our lunch in the middle of the road. And what's also funny about it is that later on in the summer, we'll drive the same road among other cars and say to ourselves, hey, this is where we had a picnic last winter. It is so spectacular, the feeling that you get up there being alone. And I think it puts my whole life in perspective because things get so hectic with the kids. And when we're there and the kids are happy and quiet, and just it's just so peaceful, and you really do just want to breathe in.
Eva Powell lives in Lincolnton, North Carolina. Read her letter to us. Just go to our website at weekendamerica.org.
And we found a winter poem in the latest issue of the literary magazine Granta. This is by the British writer and poet Craig Raine. It's called How Snow Falls.
Like the unshaven prickle of a sharpened razor, this new coldness in the air, the pang of something intangible filling our eyes, the sinusitis of perfume without the perfume, and then love's vertigo, love's exactitude, this snow, this transfiguration we never quite get over.
You can stay warm this weekend with the literary magazine Granta. It's their 100th issue, appropriately titled Granta 100. Poet Craig Raine lives in Oxford, England.
Well, Winter may make some wax poetic, but for others, winter isn't about beautiful words, but beautiful sounds, like the tingling of ice crystals on a lake just before it freezes, or the slice of skates on freshly groomed ice, or the deep silence after a fresh snow. Or if you live in Hawaii, the wind whipping by as you drive along the ocean. For those in Boston this weekend, it could also be the sound of winter choral music.
Hello, I'm Mary Beekman. I'm the director of Musica Sacra in Boston, Massachusetts. And this Saturday, we are presenting a program called Blow Thou Winter Wind, comprised of choral works that are written in celebration and contemplation of winter. Of course, I have a bias. I don't like winter. The interesting thing is to see how someone who loved winter might hear the music that sets the words dying sun. The harmonic desperation calls to mind the fragmented patterns of frost on a cold day when you look out your window and the vapor from your house is escaping to the outside. There is also another aspect that winter generates, and that is one of contemplation. It's the way you might feel when you look out on a gray winter morning and see a red cardinal sitting on a bare branch in the midst of the snow. It might cause you to be in that very moment in a way that the hustle and bustle of the other seasons do not allow you to do. I would hope that the listener would leave with a wonderful sense of exhilaration for all of the gifts that a season, which some of us tend to just try to get through and hope will be as short-lived as possible, that in fact winter has unique aspects relative to the other times of the year, which provide a great wealth and a great enrichment to the human experience.
Musica Sacra performs these and other winter songs in their program, Blow Thou Winter Wind, tonight in Boston.
You're listening to Weekend America. Next week in our Listening In series, we'll be listening in with architect Daniel Libeskind to the music that begins his day. Libeskind is well known for his designs of the Jewish Museum in Berlin and the Freedom Tower at Ground Zero. And there is something he has to do before heading to his studio each morning.
I don't think I would have a good day if I wasn't able to start by listening to music. So it's not something of a luxury, it's almost a necessity. And it's not a background. I don't do it as, you know, hustle, bustle of domestic life. And in the background, there's music. I sit down when I have the time, and mostly I do have time early in the morning, just to listen to a piece of music.
Folks, now here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a red-hot hoochie-coocher. She was the roughest...
Cab Calloway's Minnie the Moocher gets Danielle Libeskind going in the morning. I love it. And we're going to hear more about that next week. But what about you?
What kind of music gets you ready for your day? What song do you listen to in the morning before you have to go out there and face the world? And why does it work for you? Now, we're going to put together a Week in America Songs to Start Your Day listener playlist. So let us know your favorite songs. Go to our website, weekinamerica.org.
With a bloke named Smokey, she loved him though he was cokey. He took her down to Chinatown. He showed her how to kick the gong around.
Showed her how to kick the gong around.
Heavy snow might blanket the Northeast from New York to Boston late this weekend. For more weather, here's Week in America's John Moe.
Albuquerque, New Mexico has sun, 45 degrees, and a couple of challenges. First, spelling Albuquerque correctly. Second, trying to telepathically communicate with your pets. There's a seminar on the topic today. If your doggy mind meld doesn't work, could be one of two things: psychic energy blockage, or maybe your dog just isn't real bright. Most events have backup plans in case weather doesn't cooperate, but if you're having Ice Fest, like Brainerd, Minnesota is trying to, and there isn't enough ice despite clouds in 23, well, Ice Fest is canceled. I guess without ice, you just have plunge into the water hockey and bottom of the lake skating. Hard to find participants, boring to watch. Things are a little more on track in Ouray, Colorado, which has sun, a high of 31, and plenty of ice for the Ouray Ice Climbing Festival. Climbing clinics, equipment demonstrations, and one of the most challenging ice climb courses in the world. It's also the world's most treacherous accidental sledding course, but that's more by default. For information on these and other events, go to weekendamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm John Moe for Weekend America.
Coming up, the bombers fly overhead, and a little girl in pigtails serenades the pilots. Song and Memory is next on Weekend America.
Weekend America is supported by LendingTree, helping customers find the fixed-rate loan that's right for them. You can choose from up to four offers today. 1-800-555-TREE or at LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm Desiree Cooper in St. Paul, Minnesota.
And I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles.
The one song that I remember from my childhood.
The first song that I remember.
My dad used to sing it.
The most important song.
I just love to play over and over and over and over.
This weekend, our Song and Memory series takes us to the small town of Halls, Tennessee, about an hour north of Memphis. During World War II, Halls was home to the Dyersburg Army Air Base. There was a little girl living there whose name was Lucinda. Today, Lucinda listens to Weekend America, and she wrote to us with her memories of B-17s soaring overhead and about a song she used to sing as they passed.
My name is Lucinda Alsobrook Coulter Burbeck, and my song that's most memorable to me is Coming In on a Wing and a Prayer.
Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer.
I lived in a little town where they built a staging base for the Air Force. It was very real to us that the war was on.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
I knew that we were fighting Hitler and Mussolini and that it was a terrible, terrible thing. They had a bombing range not too far from town. So during the war, there were planes going overhead every day and at night sometimes too. Those planes roar. I can remember lying in bed and hearing bombs fall. And I knew not to be afraid. I knew it was our soldiers that were doing it. So when they went over our house, the trees would be bending down. And I'd run out to the side yard next to the holly tree and sing at the top of my lungs.
Coming in on a wing and a
coming
prayer.
In on a wing and a prayer.
Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Though there's one motor gun, we can still carry on. Coming in on a wing and a prayer.
I had pigtails, and I always wore dresses. And I would stand out there and try to sing loud enough to be heard by the boys in the plane overhead.
Coming in on a wing and a prayer.
I wanted to bring them home safely. Maybe that wasn't really doing it, but for a seven-year-old, it seemed to be.
One motor gun, we can still carry on. Coming in on a wing and a prayer.
All thanks from America to all you guys.
An awful lot of the families in town took in boarders. It was people who thought they might never see their husband or their boyfriend again, and they had just moved heaven and earth to get there, and then there was no place for them to stay, so people took them in. We had nine boarders upstairs. There was my mother and father, and we also had a soldier and his wife and a baby living in my playhouse. They had a hot plate on the window box, and the baby slept in a carriage. So there were actually 13 adults, one child, and three babies. Some of my earliest memories are standing outside the one bathroom, pounding on the door and saying, "But I have to go." We had so many people in the house, and some of them could play the piano, so we would stand around the piano and they would sing. We sang all the military songs.
Over hill, over dale, we have
caissons go rolling along.
And those caissons go rolling along.
The Air Force song was very, very important. Off we go into the wild blue yonder, flying high into the sun.
Me. Could somebody tell me whether this is where you get B ration books?
If something was really special, we'd pool their ration coupons and we'd have a cake, which was made it really special because we didn't get much sweets during the war. And I thought that was a great time.
All over the world tonight, that's glad, glad news that we've been waiting for years.
Japan has today surrendered.
This is your victory.
They closed the base down in 46. They just left the base with streets and hangars, and we had over a mile and a half of runway, very wide. And when I was in high school, we would go out there and drag race on the old runways. There was only one policeman most of the time I was growing up, and he didn't even have a car. So I've driven 115 miles an hour, and my parents are dead, so they can't hear me say that. Later on, I really wanted to take flying lessons, and I was in Biloxi, Mississippi, and on the radio, they were advertising that I could take a flying lesson for $5. I wasn't making much money at that time. This is back about 1959, and I went out and took my first lesson.
What a show, what a fight.
I am sure that the first time I soloed, that Coming In on a Wing and a Prayer was there with me the whole trip.
How we sing as we limp through the air.
It's funny when I see the military flying, and my husband now is retired military, and we're on a base occasionally, and I see the planes overhead, I still think of that song.
And our trust in the Lord, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer.
Well, it's a 1940 song, but today we have men overseas flying again, and we have to worry about whether our boys come home safely. I guess it's praying for our soldiers wherever they are.
With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer.
Our Song and Memory series is produced by Ann Hepperman, Rick Moody, and Kara Oler, with production help from Lila Dobbs. We just heard the song in memory of Lucinda Alsobrook Coulter-Burback, who wrote to us about growing up on Dyersburg Army Air Base in Halls, Tennessee. There's a veterans museum there now, built on one of the old air ramps. And we're told that on weekends there, you'll find folks talking about the old times. You can see the museum and little Lucinda in pigtails and her family's boarders and some B-17s, too, when you spend time with us at weekendamerica.org. And that's another hour of American Public Media's Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. Remember, you can download a free podcast of the entire program at weekendamerica.org. So get out there and enjoy your weekend.
This program is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independence in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul, and made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by
American Public Media.
Hi, I'm Desiree Cooper, co-host of Weekend America. The weekends are for freedom.
Our job is to liberate them from the sensibilities and the conventions of their day-to-day life.
Now I just walk down the street and I'm like Mary Poppins. I'm free as a bird.
Forget the chores, the errands, and the weekend runaround. Liberate yourself with Weekend America, where great radio lives on the weekend.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.